This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Ross Castles,
Andrew Stevens,
and Vicky Marie Buchanan. So, welcome, Ross. Last time we were talking about your amazing beginning of a career in the Forestry Service, and then you moved into DOC as well. So, tell us a little bit about that transition and what happened in your work with DOC here in Manawatu.
Well, the first day I was transferred to Palmerston from Masterton with New Zealand Forest Service. Mm-hmm. Was the day that the then Labor government announced that they were going to do away with New Zealand Forest Service. So anyway, that didn't happen for another 18 months. So, you know, I did what I was brought here to do with Forest Service. And it was in quite an uncertain time because we didn't know what was going to happen to us all. And there were three options. In front of most of us, we could either go to the to be newly formed Forestry Corporation, or we could go to the to be newly formed Ministry of Forestry or Conservation Department. Mm-hmm. And I put in for a number of I think I put in for Ministry of Forestry and DOC. Mm-hmm. And ended up getting the district conservator's job for Palmerston North. So all of a sudden I found that I was going to be responsible for forming the new Department of Conservation District in Palmerston.
Wow, no pressure.
And it was a funny time because that took a while to come into being. And so we were all in this big Forest Service office in Palmerston, and we had a smoko room which was quite big, and we all used to, in Forest Service, we'd all gather up there and have smoko and all that. But I noticed that as people started getting jobs in Forestry Corporation, Ministry of Forestry and DOC, people started to sort of congregate in their groups, you know. Yeah, it became a little bit tribal. But in DOC I was the only DOC person, so I was just on my own, so I just would go and sit around with other people. And then we, you know, we were working in the you know, the new organisations that were going to come out of Forest Service. But we then had to sort of set about accumulating enough equipment to run our particular operation, and I was going to be in charge of Conservation Department Rangitiki District. And in that district there was staff coming from Lands and Survey, from the Lands and Survey reserves that were in our area, someone from Wildlife Service, and some of us from Forest Service. And the Forest Service people were the Forest Park people that I talked about last week. Mm-hmm. And that was Ruaheni Forest Park. Mm-hmm. I went round, you know, visited all those people. Mm-hmm. We had three Forest Service bases. Mm-hmm. In the southeast and western Ruahenis that were going to come into my district. There were about three staff with Lands and Survey, the reserve section, and three staff and quite a number of wage workers. Mm-hmm. And one wildlife guy who was out of Puki Puki Lagoon. The Lands and Survey people were largely working on clearing Old Man's Beard and the many reserves that were going to come into the district. And we also had to sort of accumulate equipment and, you know, like Land Rovers and you know, vehicles and all that kind of thing.
So that didn't come automatically from the government?
No. It was a bit like Dunkirk, really. It was a bit of a shambles because it was, the government said, this is when it happened. So we were, being Forest Service, we were pretty used to operating in the field. And it wasn't too difficult to accumulate gear. You had to be quite enterprising. But I managed to put together a well-equipped district.
So you were writing the manuals, really,
My role changed from sort of planning and technical to purely operational. I was in charge of this new district, you see. So I was the manager of it, if you like it. So we came together and sort of hit the deck running, and I was about 35 at the time, so looking back I was quite young. But I had about 20 people in the district all up. We set up our a field base at the Te Arakura School, I think it was, near Fielding. That was our main workshop. We had the Forest Service base, ex-Forest Service base at Pohongana, another one at Woodfill, and another one at Mangaweka. And we had a really good team, actually. Really enjoyed that job. We pulled everyone together. I pulled everyone together.
And my feeling, my perception of that, bringing all people from lands and work and wildlife and everything, it's a good holistic team.
It was, and it really, it did make sense to have all the sort of conservation areas under one umbrella, because Forest Service had the forest parks, Lands and Survey had the reserves and the national parks, they all came into DOC. Wildlife Service managed the, rare and endangered species that happened to live in a lot of cases in the forest parks or the national parks, not just there. It made a lot of sense to have that under one umbrella. We also had, the marine mammals responsibilities.
Okay.
So it was... It was a really good job, we came together as a good team, and we had firefighting responsibilities. Forest Service, we'd done a huge amount of forest firefighting, but that came over into DOC as well for the conservation areas.
You were talking about the Manawatū tracks as well.
The forest Ruahinis had become a forest park during Forest Service times, and there was more and more recreation happening in there. Initially, people used the hunters' huts and the tracks that had been built to cater for those operations. But Forest Service were beginning to develop those as tramping tracks, like Tararuas. That had been happening for years. Tramping clubs had been doing it, and Forest Service had been doing it. And, you had tracks in the national parks and all that kind of thing. So in DOC, we carried on doing that. But some reserves were also good, for recreational use. For example, the Manawatū Gorge, that was one, the Ringawahia track up to Rangihut and the Ruahinis, that was a very popular track. So what we did in this district, Rangitiki district, was to sort of work out what sort of tracks, the public needed. Ideally you have sort of entry-level tracks for people that want to build up experience, mid-level ones, and then ideally they have enough experience to get into the sort of hinterland where there's less tracks and you need to be more experienced in bushcraft, mountaincraft and that kind of thing. The Manawatu Gorge was one area where we thought that we could put a track in, and the origins of that were our guys were working in there controlling Old Man's Beard, and Ministry of Works were, of course, trying to stabilise, you know, slips on the road. And the engineer, Buck Alley, as I recall, mentioned to our guys this Manawatu Gorge would make a good track because Ministry of Works were up putting cables and netting to try and stabilise it, so they knew the gorge quite well. My guys put it to me that it would be a good idea, so we walked through there with Buck and decided there and then that yes, this would be a great, great asset for the area because it was close to population centres and not particularly difficult to get through.
What year was that?
That would have been, I left Dock 89, 87 I think, 85 it started. That would have been about 86, 87 I think. Yeah, and then we got the money to start it, and we put in a rough track, sort of blazed the track and that kept going for a number of years. I'd left Dock by then, but they kept working on the track and then got a route through there. It was, you know, it wasn't a well-formed track initially, but over the years it was improved and you know, it became a very, very popular track, and the communities have embraced it now, and it's a sort of bit of a jewel in the crown around here. And it's lovely. I haven't been in for a long time, but it was just lovely to walk along anonymously and just look at the people enjoying it, actually. Yeah, it was lovely. But the other one was the Rangawahia track. That was a track that went up to the Rangawahia Hut. That had been a popular ski area in the old days. They had a rope tow up there, and the locals had cut a track up there. And gradually it had improved. When I came along and Dock it, there was a swing bridge over a stream up in there, and it wasn't very safe. So we built the bridge that's there now. It's a laminated beam bridge, curved bridge. It was flown in with an Alouette helicopter in two halves and joined. And Helen Clark was the Minister of Conservation at the time, so I thought, oh, we'll see if we can get her to come up and open it. So yeah, she agreed, and we all went up there, and I can't remember, she must have cut the ribbon or whatever, and we walked back down. So there is, or was, a plaque on a rock there saying what had happened. But that was the Rangi track was the main track, if you like, on the western Ruaheni. So, you know, very popular track. Must go up there again, actually.
So your passion for the forest and the bush and everything is with you very much. Still, obviously, today.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about what else you did in Dock, before, as well as the tracks.
The big thing, I mean, Ruaheni Forest Park was a big component of it, but the problem area were the scenic reserves. There were about 50, I think, from memory, in the district, and a lot of them were infested with Old Man's Beard, and all of the control before that had tended to concentrate on Manawatu Gorge, and these reserves that we had were all up through the Rangitiki. So we appointed someone to develop a control plan for this. It was Don Ravine, sort of using methodology that we used in Forest Service, which was basically Don went around all the reserves and assessed the severity of the problem in each reserve, and he worked with the guys who'd been working on it, Tom Rouse and his staff, Dave Smith, and they knew how much work was involved in actually eradicating the Old Man's Beard on the ground. So we quantified the amount of old men's beard in each of the reserves. We were able to bring that down to, we called it man days then, but person days required to cut it, and then, you know, how much chemical we put, I think, tordon in those days on the stumps once it was cut, and you know, how much vehicle running and all that. So we were able to break down the exact amount of work required in each reserve, and then we prioritised those too. So there was a systematic control plan that was developed by Don, and then on the basis of that, I was able to go to the, you know, regional office for the annual budgeting, you know, estimate meetings, and gain the funding to control that. And and if you wanted to graph that control effort, you know, if you, the amount of effort required to bring it under control initially was very high, and then it would, you know, as you got on top of it, the amount of work required to, you know, would diminish until you reached a sort of level point at the bottom where you had to maintain that control.
And how did that you was, control it? Was it?
It was cut by hand. You know, the big vines, you cut them off at ground level, and then they in those days they sprinkled tordon granules just on the cut stump. That was very effective. But if a bit much was there, or you got a lot of rain, you know, that tordon would dissolve and run a little way down the slope. But you know, it wasn't too bad. Basically, I mean, you know, I didn't see the end result of that, and I don't know what's happened to that program since. I know, you know, it was, you know, this problem still exists, which suggests that the, you know,
and bird life.
But that methodology was good, and it worked, and that was a very systematic way of doing it. And I would say that, you know, that's a sort of effort that could be replicated.
Elsewhere. And bird life, was that, did that increase with extra work?
Yeah, well, not because of that, but the big challenge for birds, of course, is predators. And that was a big learning curve for me because, you know, in Forest Service, we, in the forest parks, we were primarily trying to stop the forest from eroding, hence the deer control and all that. But the birds in the old days were the responsibility of Wildlife Service, you see. Now they were all under DOC, which was great. And so, you know, the wildlife guy in our district, he had that expertise. And so, you know, as time went on, we all accumulated that expertise. And, you know, nowadays the sort of predator control programs are big. For instance, the work the Whio Protection Trust has been doing in the Rohenis to protect the Whio blue duck. More recent work trying to remove enough predators to release kiwi again, and the work that the City Council's doing in the Turitea Reserve. You know, they've got a very good predator control program, which has got to the point where they've been able to release bush robins into the reserve here. So, but the thing is, the principles for managing that sort of forest against invasive species is basically the same in big terms. The principles used for controlling old man's beard and invasive species, you know, are similar to the principles used for controlling birds, of controlling predators that attack birds. You know, in that case, you're dealing with rats, possums, and stoats. So, you know, instead of cutting vines, you're killing predators through, you know, through traps, through poisoning, and that kind of thing.
Just to close, in your heart, was it a good thing, in hindsight, from two experiences, Forestry Service and DOC, Was it a good thing that the merge happened into DOC, or do you think the two should have stayed separate?
I think it was a really good thing that the forest parks, the national parks, the reserves, the wildlife, marine mammals were all included in DOC. No, that was a good move. What happened to the pine forest was, you know, after the Forestry Corporation got going, I think that would have been a good organisation. They were then sold off, flogged off, and pretty much a fire sale. And
sold off to?
Well, private buyers, overseas buyers. And, you know, there were no real controls on managing those forests. And the Ministry of Forest was swallowed up into, was it Internal Affairs? I can't remember now. Basically disappeared. You know, so there was no forestry advocate at government level. And, you know, that exotic, the pine forest industry is a huge export earner. And, you know, it's been a disaster, absolute disaster. Now they've re-established a forest service again, and, you know, that's and we've got carbon forests now that are, you know, there's huge angst over those, half-baked policy that was put in place with unintended consequences. You know, there was no expertise at government level to, you know, to stop politicians from having a rush of blood to the head and launching off in different directions.
Without thinking what you said, the long term.
Well, they didn't, you know, there wasn't a government department that advocated for good forest management practices. In my opinion.
Yeah, in your opinion.
You can see I'm a little bit invested in that.
That brings so much income to this country as well.
Well, the pine forest, too. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of our biggest export
and
areas.
Our beautiful natives.
But it's not being done well. I mean, look at all the erosion we're getting. Yeah. That's shocking.
Yeah.
You know, it was a laissez-faire approach where the regional and district councils often made forestry a permitted use, and there were no controls on it. And, you know, they, you know, Forest Service did control that, the logging. You know, we were very strict on loggers, and you know, there was a very clear you know, way of doing things in later years.
But in hindsight, was that really looked into further ahead?
No, the whole Roger Douglas and the neoliberal movement was really all about less government and more private enterprise. But, you know, the wheels are falling off health, for example. You know, railways was a political football that was flogged around and stripped and, you know, bought back and, you know, brought back under government control.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.